you pursuing a natural lifestyle for yourself and your family? Are you concerned about the standard American diet and options available for healthcare? Are you curious about herbs or health or already practice home herbalism? You've come to the right place. My mom, Naomi Kilbrick, is a Christian clinical herbalist and owner of Laura Chi Wellness. She teaches simple ways to live in a more healthy way and to work with plants to promote and restore health. Welcome to the Family Herbalism Podcast.
Welcome back to the Family Herbalism Podcast and to Herba Remedium students. You know, I think we're probably all familiar with the Hippocrates quote that says that food should be our medicine and medicine should be our food. But I think, and I would like to make the case for the idea that water is just as important. Even if you look at just the survival aspect of drinking water, we know that we can live about 3 weeks without food, but only 3 to 5 days without water. And so water, I'm going to make the case for, is really, really important to overall health for a number of reasons. Now, I had a client come in recently who, among other things, tried to draw me into a debate over why water was so important. And he said, everyone says we need it, but why? He's like, I've lived for so long without drinking water, so it must not be that important. And meanwhile, he had high blood pressure, high cholesterol, high blood sugar, and he was overweight. So just fine indeed, right? And really, I feel at this point that if someone cannot look at the requirement of water that our body needs and recognize that as a crucial aspect of overall holistic health, they really shouldn't be messing around with herbs. This is like ground level holistic health education right here. Now, that does not mean that we all have water under control and that we know what we're doing with our intake and we're taking action on these things, but we should have a basic understanding that water is really important. I also had a client who came in and who had admitted that he hardly ever drank water. But as we explored this aspect of his health and he began to track the water intake that he was taking over the course of the week, he realized that on the days that he drank the most water, he felt the best and had the least amount of pain. And so he was able to make some concrete actions based on this information that he had gathered. So you might be wondering what it is about water that's so important that we have to talk about today, because water is really simple, right? But actually it's quite complex. And I think that it's really important to discuss this as we're talking about holistic health, because if we're going to be talking about bringing in herbs, we really need to make sure we've got our ground level issues taken care of. And this simple question of water can actually become quite complicated when we think about things like whether well water or town water is safer. Because just looking at this aspect in particular, well water, you know, where I come from, we think of well water as being safer because it doesn't have the added chemicals and the fluoride and things like that. But well water may not have those things, but it's also more likely to have runoff, higher levels of heavy metals because it's not being tested on a regular basis to confirm safety. And so even though we think of water as being a simple, straightforward thing, it's actually something that's really important to look at. So today I want to cover a few main points about water because it's so crucial to good health. I'm going to cover basics about dehydration and what water does for our bodies, the importance of taking in electrolytes as well as water, the role water plays in many herbal remedies, and finally, what are the best sources of water to drink from? First, let's start with an article published in 2002 by Stat Pearls. This was referred to a 1998 survey of over 3,000 Americans showing that 75,000 of them were chronically dehydrated because they were only drinking about 2.5 cups of water a day. And while this is definitely an outdated survey, there is limited research that has been done since then to discover what level of dehydration Americans are currently at. So this is what we're working with. But we do know that the same article pointed to the incidence of hospitalizations due to dehydration or the effects of dehydration. And overall, they were able to pinpoint this issue as being really important to influencing the general health of Americans. If I were to throw out an estimate, I would say that probably about half of my clients are chronically dehydrated because they're either not drinking enough water or there is another aspect of their health that's influencing how their cells are gathering up this fluid they're drinking. So I'm going to talk about what some of those aspects might be, because hydration is not just a simple matter of bringing in fluids. And I think that's really important to emphasize as we're talking about drinking water and hydration. Now, it is true that by the time that you register that you are thirsty, you're probably already dehydrated. But there are other signs of dehydration that we should know about, including having dry mouth and lips, dry eyes, feeling dizzy or lightheaded, feeling generally fatigued or tired all of the time, passing small amounts of dark urine infrequently, vomiting. That's like a further down the road, more of an excess sign of dehydration. If you've gotten to that point, we have problems. But headaches are also a common symptom of dehydration. If you are chronically dehydrated for a long period of time, there are a number of complications that can result. And these are easy to find on the internet, so I'm not going to back them up with studies at this point in time, but you can look them up. They include high blood pressure, rapid heart rate, joint pain and muscle cramps, fever, low sodium levels, kidney and gallstones, mood swings, difficulty concentrating and confusion, poor memory, poor fine and large motor skills, bad breath, and difficulty losing weight. Now, if we think of this in terms of preventing dehydration and bringing in adequate amounts of water and actually absorbing that into our cells, we can think about these in terms of their opposite. If we are properly hydrated, we'll have healthier skin, better energy, quick thinking, positive mood, smooth moving joints, and great muscle strength. Drinking enough water also means we'll have improved digestion, as we learned about last week, easier detoxification, improved oxygenation of the cells, better hormone regulation, improved absorption of minerals, better athletic performance, and improved fat burning. And I mean, just looking at that list of things, we have to wonder, why isn't it that we focus more on hydration as an aspect of our holistic health? Now, one fascinating thing I learned on a podcast about water called Metabolic Health, this was the name of the episode, which was on the Christian Health Club podcast, episode number 193. This was that once you ingest water as H2O, it actually changes in your body into H3O2. And this stimulates blood flow through arteries and veins and provides a negative charge to stimulate cellular metabolism. This supports the more recent understanding that I've been reading about, that it isn't just the heart that pumps blood through the body, because that would be, excuse me, a lot of work by the heart to create that impact throughout the entire body, but it's the action of the capillaries themselves and the veins and the arteries that are supported by this electrical charge of fluid moving in and out of the cells that actually creates a pumping action, which supports the action of the heart and continues that movement of blood throughout the body. Also fascinating was that our bodies have the ability to use resources we ingest to create water in our cells. I had never heard of the idea that our bodies could actually create water, and yet that is the case. So I do recommend checking out the Christian Health Club podcast and their episode 193 on metabolic water. I also recommend two books for further research on water, which are Water for Health, for Healing, for Life by Faridun Batmanghalij and Live Better Longer by Joseph Dispenza. Both of these contain tons of information And the one by Live Better Longer, actually, while it was written by Joseph Dispenza, was largely about the writings of Hazel Parcells. And she wrote a lot about clean water and how we can use it to promote health. She was one of the early instigators, I guess, of using magnetic or structured water to promote health, which I'll refer to toward the end of this podcast. And so you can learn more about that in her book as well, which I also have available in my lending library for clients. Now, dehydration can easily occur as a result of working outside on a hot day or when experiencing an illness. Or when we just don't drink enough water. And in these cases, we often know the steps that we need to take in order to correct it. But dehydration can occur in sneaky ways as well. So for example, on a cold winter day, you're probably not that thirsty. And so it may escape you the fact that you haven't drank enough water. When we're drinking other fluids in order to quench our thirst, like coffee or soda or even fruit juices, we may be dulling our senses of thirst, even though our bodies are not actually being replenished with adequate sources of water. Loss of water or dehydration can also occur for a number of other reasons, including a side effect of a number of health problems that can cause excess loss of water, which means that you're taking in a certain amount and you're actually releasing through urine and sweat an added amount, so more than you took in. One of the common subclinical pictures I see in my practice is an imbalance of electrolytes, which are minerals that regulate the amount of water in the bloodstream and inside the cells. These clients will often experience increased thirst, so they'll drink more and more and more water. Oftentimes these clients will come in saying they're drinking at least a gallon, sometimes a gallon and a half of water a day, and they're still thirsty. And this is because the dehydrated cells will trigger the thirst signal, but because there aren't enough electrolytes to pull the water in, the water passes right by. And unfortunately, this can become a negative cycle because if you drink too much water, it actually can flush out the electrolytes that you do have. So it makes the problem even worse. This electrolyte imbalance is especially common for those with kidney conditions, blood pressure dysregulation, blood sugar dysregulation, and chronic infections. And for these clients, I will often recommend that they actually put a pinch of salt or Himalayan pink salt or sea salt into their first glass of water of the day. And over the course of a few days, this pattern is often reversed where they realize that they're not as thirsty anymore and some of their symptoms are actually improving. You can also add electrolyte mixes into your water. That's a great alternative. And then I'm also gonna give you the electrolyte formula that you can make at home using easy to access ingredients. I actually really like talking about controversial things like adding salt to your water because I think we often get stuck in ruts of these beliefs that we think have always existed but really haven't. And when we're talking about salt specifically, if you look back at history and where this idea that salt is bad came from, it actually started about 60 years ago when the FDA took a faulty study and used it to defend their idea that if we reduced our salt intake, we would have better blood pressure and that our risk of heart complications would be reduced. But when you look at the number of other studies that are available, you realize that it's actually the people who eat good quality, higher amounts of salt who have lower risk and experience better health. Take, for example, this study in 2011, published in the Journal of American Medicine, looked at almost 29,000 high-risk heart disease patients who you would expect to be highly sensitive to sodium, and they found that the range of sodium intake with the lowest risk for bad outcome was at 4 to 6 grams of sodium a day, which is double what the FDA recommends that healthy individuals take in each day and what you would therefore see listed on packages of food, you know, when you're looking at percentages of recommended daily intake. Other studies have also found that low sodium intake is associated with higher risk of health problems, especially regarding the heart. But there are other electrolytes that are really important. It's not just sodium. Sodium is really important, but we also need potassium, calcium, and magnesium for proper hydration. Sodium regulates the amount of fluid outside the cell, potassium inside the cell. If you become low in sodium by either drinking too much water or losing too much water, your body will pull these nutrients from your bones because it's prioritizing survival. It's thinking, we don't really need to worry about these bones long term because what we really need is to not die of thirst in the next 3 days. And therefore, we end up with a higher risk of osteoporosis. The actual amount that we need of each of these electrolytes in our blood at any given time is a narrow range that our bodies regulate pretty well as long as we have a reasonable amount in our diet. The funny thing is that a lot of the benefits that we associate with proper hydration are actually dependent also on increasing electrolytes. Better energy, improved brain function, fewer muscle cramps, fewer headaches, better performance athletic-wise, easier fasting and dieting, healthy blood pressure, regular bowel movements, improved sleep. All of these are actually associated with a proper balance of water and electrolytes. Recently, my family got sick and I also ended up with a stomach bug. And toward the end of it, my friend gave me these electrolyte packets. And I started off the day, this was in recovery phase. I started off the day feeling super weak and tired. I took about 2 grams of, I took 2 packets of electrolytes, which had 2 grams of sodium. And I noticed a huge, huge difference in my energy level within 2 to 3 hours. And then I had another packet later on, and I actually had a hard time falling asleep that night, which is very unusual for me because I just suddenly had all this energy. Like, what am I gonna do with this, right? Well, I'm supposed to be sleeping, but you know, it was exciting to suddenly feel good. And so this was just an example of how much of a difference electrolytes can make, just simple minerals that we can get from our food and that we can concentrate into our drinks when we need to make sure that we're getting this extra fluid and supporting our body's electrical functions. So again, we can get these from our food. Sodium, potassium, calcium, and magnesium are the 4 that we need the most of, but we also need chloride, phosphate, bicarbonates, and zinc. And really anywhere that you would get these minerals from are gonna be supportive. So eggs are a great source of minerals. Vegetables, your meats, your beans, your seeds, seaweed. This is where we get our electrolytes from. And although sometimes we do benefit from them, adding them in intentionally to our foods, as in taking electrolyte powders or making some different rehydration formulas, which I'll give you a recipe for, it's still helpful to make sure that we're getting them into our foods on a regular basis. Now, the formula that I give to people for rehydrating is super basic. It covers the most important electrolytes for getting fluid into our bodies, and it uses basic ingredients that most of us have in our houses, which means that if you get sick or your kids get sick, you can draw from these resources whenever you need to. And so what I do is I have my clients get together a quart-sized jar and put into that 2 tablespoons of honey, 1 tablespoon of lemon juice, 1 teaspoon of salt, and 1/2 teaspoon of baking soda. Top it off with water, cover it, shake it up really good, and just sip on it. And you can refrigerate it, which can make it a little bit more palatable for some people. It's not the best tasting stuff. It's certainly not as tasty as some of the pre-made electrolyte drinks that you can get, but it is going to really help boost your energy and support recovery from illness. So I have been asked, what about tea? Does tea count as your fluid intake for the day? And the answer is that it can, but not always. If your tea does contain caffeine, as in black tea, or if it's astringent or drying in nature, then it's not going to count toward your fluid intake because the point is to be adding hydration, not to be decreasing. So things like coffee, black tea, juice, soda, and other drinks do not count. But if you are looking at herbal teas then that are not caffeinated or drying in nature, then yes, that definitely counts towards your fluid intake for the day. Another question that I get is about sparkling water and seltzer. Sparkling water is actually hydrating because it contains natural minerals that have not been removed. So if you're drinking sparkling water, this is totally okay and can be added to your total amount of water intake for the day. Seltzer water is hydrating because it is real water, but it does not contain electrolytes. Now, what you're going to see on the internet when you search up seltzer and the problems with electrolytes is that it's going to somehow detract from the electrolytes that you have, but this isn't actually the case. It's more like drinking distilled water, which is just plain water that has zero minerals in it. So if you are drinking seltzer, that does contribute to your hydration as long as you're also getting salt and other minerals that you need in your daily diet. So just pay a little bit extra attention to make sure you're getting those electrolytes if you are drinking seltzer. Now, before you think this episode is all about hydration, I also want to present the idea that water is a huge aspect of working with herbs. There are many ways to bring herbs into our body, and water is simply a carrier of medicine that we frequently rely on. So, for example, some foods and herbs are naturally loaded with water or moistening qualities. Herbs like marshmallow, slippery elm, violet, cinnamon, fenugreek, mullein, plantain, and corn silk. These are among my favorites. We also have herbs that support movement of fluid through the body, such as lymphatics, if you're looking at different action words. And these are herbs like red clover or chickweed, cleavers, ground ivy. They're very stimulating plants that can help move fluid throughout the body. And then we also have herbs that tone water pathways so that we don't lose as much water. And these are really helpful when either we're experiencing sudden fluid loss, like vomiting or diarrhea, or on a hot summer day where we need to slow down the sweating process a little bit. And these are herbs like sumac, red raspberry, black raspberry, horse chestnut, and sage. A great example of this would be the practice of drinking lemon juice, like a lemonade, or making an iced tea with raspberry leaf or sumac berries. These are all very toning to the tissues to help us slow down that water loss process. And we also have different methods of introducing herbs into the body using water, like diffusers to carry aromatic essential oils into the air, herbal steams to carry volatile properties into our lungs and through our facial skin, compresses where we would make a tea and then dip a washcloth in and then apply that to different areas of the body. And this can deliver herbal constituents through our skin to lots of different areas. And then, of course, we have infusions and decoctions, which are variations of making a medicinal tea. And then you have sitz baths and full body water baths and foot baths and all kinds of different ways that we can work with water. And water also can be a medicine all by itself, which I don't want to discount at all. There is a ton of interesting research around using temperature for healing, as in fever baths for all kinds of infections, hot and cold compresses following joint injuries, and alternating sauna and cold plunging for long-term health. And for each one of these, you can find podcasts and books and all sorts of resources to defend these ideas that that water by itself can be very therapeutic. The final question that I hear that I would like to talk about today is, what is the best quality of water to drink? Many of us want to make sure that the water that we drink has a known mineral content, that it's low or absent in heavy minerals, understanding that some heavy minerals are actually healthy for us in tiny amounts, like iron, zinc, manganese, and magnesium, and that also our water does not contain fluoride or waste products. while we were personally trying to reverse our daughter's autoimmune condition, we did move toward spring water. We switched from tap water to spring water, and we drove about 20 minutes to collect this each week or two maybe, and we did do so in plastic jugs, which then brings up a whole other ball of, beeswax, I guess. I do believe that the spring water, alongside other lifestyle choices that we made, did make a big difference in her overall toxin load and make it easier for her body to heal. Now, spring water is loaded with electrolytes, which means that it's naturally going to help you absorb the water that you're drinking. But it's also free of many contaminants as long as you get it from a decent source, which is why many people really like to drink spring water. But if you don't have access to spring water, there are other steps that you can take. Filtration is a great option. We actually now filter our rainwater as part of our off-grid system, and that's what we use to drink. Reverse osmosis filters are an excellent option. A lot of people really like those. Drinking mineral water, distilled water, and simply adding electrolytes or highlighting them in your diet as an option for supplementing the missing electrolytes from drinking distilled water are options. And then we have purified water, which is both filtered and then goes through a second process like distillation or reverse osmosis. We have alkaline water, as in volcanic water. This can be really medicinal for people who have chronic illnesses that are associated with more of an acidic condition. And then finally, we have structured water, which is where the water is exposed to either UV light or other processes that change the molecular shape of the water so that it behaves as if it was uncontaminated and is more supportive to long-term health. And so because there are so many different variations of water, I decided to include an article for the additional resources for Herba Remedium students. So that will be tagged in the text. And if you would like to continue this conversation as a listener of the Family Herbalism Podcast, feel free to reach out and we can talk more about this as well. So then, of course, on top of what kind of water you're going to drink, you're also going to want to think about what you're drinking from. Because if you take, any old plastic bottle and you pour your perfect spring water into it, is it going to be as healthy for you? And I say, yes, it's going to be healthy for you. If we're trying to be really careful to avoid contaminants, clearly, avoiding plastics, especially those that have BPAs and PFASs and phthalates and flame retardants and PCBs and all of those other chemicals, is really important. And also, of course, avoiding aluminum metal containers for drinking. But I think that even if you have to drink from such a container, you're still going to benefit from all of the minerals from your spring water or other high quality water that you're drinking. Ideally, if you have options to choose from, glass and stainless steel are considered the healthiest materials for drinking containers. And, again, any step that you can take to improve the intake of your water is going to be beneficial. So even if you're drinking tap water through a Brita filter, it's going to be better for you. You need to make sure that you're drinking enough water and that you're getting your electrolytes so that you're not chronically dehydrated. What all of these studies did not look at was the quality of water. So I guarantee you that most, if not all of them, were drinking either untested well water or tap water or bottled water, or just things that are highly accessible to us and what most of us drink from. And yet we still saw in the results these huge improvements in health. So if you need to be very careful because you have someone in your family who has an autoimmune condition, definitely look at what kind of plastic you're drinking from, or specifically what minerals are being added to your distilled water, what kind of filter you're using. These things can be important, but for most of us, it really comes down to drink more water and make sure you're getting your minerals as well. And also remember that, you know, and I think this is kind of the point that I want to leave you with, is water is really important for our health. And it's not just drinking, but it's also foods that support hydration. It's also working with water-based herbal remedies. And it can also be looking at what kinds of water and how we're drinking it as well. But don't overcomplicate it. So salt your foods, drink your water, and toast to health. And have a wonderful week, guys. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you again here very soon.
The Family Herbalism Podcast is created for educational purposes only. You are responsible for any and all medical and health decisions you choose to make. If you experience a medical emergency, please contact appropriate medical providers. To receive herbalist support, please visit www.laureltreewellnessllc.com. If you enjoy this podcast and find it helpful, please share it with your friends and family. Thank you for listening.